From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Jennifer Mitchell, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, December 27th, 2018. And on this day, Maine Governor-elect Janet Mills taps Heather Johnson as her pick to lead economic and community development efforts in her new administration. Snowmobiling season is about to kick off, and we look at a case of immigration policy and state policy colliding in Vermont. That's ahead in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, presenting Gardens Aglow, where visitors will see the gardens in a whole new light, now through December 31st. MaineGardens.org.
Maine Governor-elect Janet Mills has chosen the director of the Connect Me Authority, which promotes broadband access, as her nominee to oversee the State Department of Economic and Community Development. Mal Leary tells us more.
Heather Johnson has been director of the Connect Me Authority since the first of this year. Prior to that, she served for 3 years as executive director of the Somerset Economic Development Corporation and has also worked in the private sector for companies such as Polaroid and Nokia. Johnson says if confirmed as commissioner, her first order of business will be to assess the distinct challenges facing different parts of the state and different sectors of the economy.
I'd say step one is really understanding who's working on what and what those missions are and how we leverage that work so that we can fill the need.
Johnson says part of the task at hand will include working with regional and local groups to make development efforts more efficient. Workforce development has been identified as a problem by companies seeking to locate or to expand in the state. Specifically, workers lack the skills that those employers say they need. Johnson says that is an issue that must be addressed, not only in the Department of Economic and Community Development, but across many areas of government.
I think there's a lot of development work there that needs to be done with the businesses to have those solutions, but we've seen creative options already, you know, Chimbro, to train their own people because they need a larger workforce.
And other factors cited in several legislative studies of Maine's economy is the high cost of electricity in Maine. But Mills, a Democrat, believes there is an even bigger problem.
Well, it depends on the business, what it uses for electricity, but we have one of the lowest rates in New England, actually. To me, what I read most recently was the highest burden, highest challenge the businesses have in Maine is health care, cost of health care. So we're going to address that in a separate way.
Bill says that part of the answer will be the expansion of Medicaid. She also says that expanding accessibility to broadband, an issue that Johnson has been working on this past year, is also crucial to business development. Johnson's nomination will be reviewed by the legislature and must be approved by the state Senate. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
When undocumented immigrants encounter local law enforcement, they may still run the risk of being turned over to federal immigration authorities. This happened in Vermont, despite a state policy that discourages authorities from doing so. As Vermont Public Radio's John Dillon reports, a recent case shows that state police and migrant justice advocates interpret the fair and impartial policing policy very differently.
It's arraignment day in the criminal division of Addison Superior Court in Middlebury.
Can I see if Mr. Lopez is in the hallway too? Okay. Is Bowman Lopez in the courtroom?
But one defendant, a 47-year-old farm worker named Oman Lopez, is a no-show.
Mr. Lopez does not appear. There's a citation in the file. It does appear to bear the defendant's signature having been signed by him. This is DUI and leaving the scene case. What's the state's request?
Judge Allison Arms issues an arrest warrant, but Lopez is already in custody. He's in a federal detention center in New Hampshire, awaiting deportation back to his native Costa Rica. Lopez was arrested in early October for driving while drunk and for leaving the scene of an accident. The facts of his arrest are not in dispute. But after his arrest, a state police officer called Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and that night, an ICE agent picked him up at the New Haven, Vermont State Police Barracks.
In this case, a Vermont State Police Barracks was turned into a holding cell for Trump's deportation agents.
Will Lambeck is with Migrant Justice, a group that advocates for migrant farm workers. He says turning Lopez over to ICE runs counter to the state's model fair and impartial policing policy.
This is precisely the type of outcome that the fair and impartial policing policy is intended to prevent. But the state police have not updated their policy as required by multiple versions of state statute.
Lambeck says the reason why the Olman Lopez case is important is that undocumented people in Vermont are often reluctant to call law enforcement or even 911 for a medical emergency because they're afraid they'll get turned over to ICE. Olga is an undocumented farm worker who says she's been afraid to call an ambulance during a medical emergency. One of her children also gets asthma attacks, but Olga says she's been too scared to take her to the hospital.
So she said that there were plenty of occasions she needed to call an ambulance for an emergency. She heard that even the police is turning people to immigration, and that could, you know, if she calls for an emergency, maybe police is going to be involved. So she's been really afraid, and at her household, everybody's been afraid to reach out to an ambulance or to the hospital or the police.
I think they're confusing the facts here, and they're aware of that.
Lieutenant Gary Scott is the director of fair and impartial policing for the state police. He says migrant justice, not state police, is creating the atmosphere of fear.
I think there's two different things going on here. If people are in violation of the law and they are arrested, there are consequences. But if you're a victim or a witness, and our policies clearly state that, we're going to help you and we're not going to ask those types of questions. And that's been in place for a significant amount of time, many, many years.
Scott says Lopez was stopped for leaving the scene of an accident at a convenience store. A police report says he initially showed a blood alcohol level of about twice the legal limit.
So in compliance with our policy, he was under arrest. The troopers had the discretion to make a call to federal authorities if they wanted to further investigate what the status of this visa was. And it was learned then that he had overstayed. So the processing was completed and Border Patrol came.
The key word here is discretion. Scott says under both the state police protocols and the model fair and impartial policing policy, the officer was still allowed to call ICE after the arrest. He says this case is the only one in the last 2 years in which ICE was contacted after the state police stopped an undocumented person.
We are training our members to take everything into consideration when they're doing that, but ultimately it comes down to discretion of arrest and what are the extenuating circumstances of that arrest.
But Migrant Justice says the officer's discretion in this case, which led to his decision to call ICE, shows the weaknesses in the state police policy. Will Lambeck again.
Under the state's policy, Olman should not have been referred to federal immigration authorities. But the Vermont police's policy doesn't have the language, it doesn't have the provisions that speak to these practices. And that's why this trooper was able to call a deportation agent up and say, hey, I have this person in custody.
Federal law on this issue is clear. The state cannot prevent an officer from calling ICE. So what the officer did here was technically allowed. Migrant Justice has pushed to make the policy more restrictive on information sharing. Attorney General T.J. Donovan says he's working with state police on adopting the state's model policy. He says he can't second-guess the call made in the Olman Lopez case.
And I think when you're talking about a criminal investigation, that's a little bit different than some other interactions police would have. But I think the intent behind the policy is the same. You're really encouraging folks perhaps not to call, but you can't prohibit the call. And if you make the call, to be mindful of some of the consequences.
Meanwhile, Lopez is in detention, separated from his wife and three children, as his case works its way through the federal deportation process. For the New England News Collaborative, I'm John Dillon.
Well, as New Year's weekend brings each year to a close, it also traditionally marks the start of Maine's snowmobiling season.
It's been interesting so far. We had a lot of snow when we really didn't want it, and now the snow's kind of gone away when we do need it.
Conditions haven't been exactly ideal, says Bob Myers, executive director of the Maine Snowmobiling Association. A big dump of snow on top of muddy ground back in November created mushy trail conditions and interfered with grooming efforts. Since then, the mercury has been up and down, but he says there's been enough deep cold in northern and western Maine to really start to firm things up.
Nice that things are freezing up, particularly on the lakes and ponds, which will help with things quite a bit.
But the Maine Snowmobiling Association and the Maine Warden Service are also reminding people to test any ice they plan to ride across and to leave detailed trip plans with someone at home. Other rules include sticking to marked trails, avoiding alcohol, riding only on the rights, and traveling at a responsible speed. Even though there's no official speed limit for snowmobiles in Maine, wardens can cite anyone they deem to be operating unsafely. Corporal John McDonald with the Maine Warden Service tells us that each season brings about 5 or 6 snowmobile fatalities, with most of those avoidable and linked to excessive speed and alcohol. For more of today's Maine news, visit our website at mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for December 27th, 2018. Thanks to Susan Sharon, Keith Shortall, Barbara Caridi, and our digital team. I'm Jennifer Mitchell.